We have all agreed to sit down, so please forgive me for not standing up, but it makes things easier and quicker. I'm an economist, so I'm not terribly happy to go into political matters that I'll leave for further contributions. My main topic is to try to understand where we might go in from an economic standpoint, but unfortunately the more I think about it, the more it depends. I realize it really depends on the legitimacy and the political roots of the whole European context. And when I mean European, I really mean continental Europe. The UK is a different continent from our standpoint, and I leave it alone. The first thing we have to understand is where we stand and how we came there. By and large, Europeans, they like rewards. There is no, from this standpoint, something like a European culture. We like enhancing our own well-being, just the way Russians do it, Americans do it, Chinese do it, Indians do it. What is perhaps different from other populations in the world is the Europeans have been enjoying the notion of not taking responsibilities. So we like the profits, we don't want to take responsibilities, which means we don't want to take risks. Now, if you don't want to take chances, if you want to be better off, and you don't want to have responsibilities, you have only one option, and the option is rent-seeking. Rent-seeking has been the name of the game for the past 50 years or so, and I don't think one can understand how the economic institutional context in Europe developed unless you appreciate the rent-seeking key as a reading device for European development. So the first thing is rent-seeking. In order to understand where we're going and how far we shall be going, you have to look at the prospects for rent-seeking. And the good news is that the prospects for rent-seeking are bleak. We have exhausted. I mean, we're really trying to take everything we could, and now people are realizing that we have to come up with something different because the chances for further additional rent-seeking are slim. And more important, the losers from the rent-seeking game are beginning to resent it, and they realize it. The second point is that we like our leaders to promise and to deliver baskets of promises, but we do not want them to act. How do you do it? That is, how can you have the promises, but then try your best to put those leaders in a situation where they cannot deliver? Well, you have two possibilities, and we exploited them in full. One, choose bad leaders, and we did it. The second, actually, we have three possibilities. We did them all. One, choose the bad leaders. Second, create a powerful party systems. Political parties dominate the political scenes. You rule the country if you are the general secretary of the leading party, or better, of the marginal parties, not if you're the prime minister. If you're both, fair enough, but what is important is that you are really heading the political parties. And our democracies are really party system democracies, where nothing is done, but everything is being negotiated. The third thing is create strong bureaucracies. Why do you need strong bureaucracies? Well, because you have to do something anyway. I mean, you have to keep the machine going, and you must prevent political party leaders from doing anything really dangerous. So you have strong bureaucracies. The third element, so rent-seeking is the first one, party systems, bureaucratic technocrats, second point. Third point is that the European model has recently been characterized again as a model being built on consensus. So the basic idea is that if you're a political leader or a policymaker, you're not legitimate in doing what you're doing unless you do it by consensus. In the end, it does not matter why you're building up the consensus. That is, the goal is no longer relevant. What is relevant is the means, consensus by itself. So the best you can say of a political leader in Europe is that he's balanced. Balance means he's able to do nothing, but he does it with style. That is, he keeps silent. And, of course, you don't want to have conflict. Now, within this framework, you understand it's the real European miracle is having been able to come where we've come with this institutional framework. It has worked. It has been a success story. In many ways, if you look at conflict, it has been social conflict, as it is sometimes called. It has been kept to a minimum. If you look at growth rates, they've been impressive. If you look at democratic development, no matter how you want to define it, it has been good. The consequences, however, have come to the surface, and the consequences are that you are being ruled as European by a multi-layer bureaucracy. That is, you have a knot in bureaucratic power, and your role in society, both as a producer and as a simple citizen, has become more and more influenced by your connections with the bureaucratic structure. We used to talk about one bureaucracy as one single block. It's not true. Bureaucracy is a multi-layer story, and your role in society, and bureaucracy I mean not only civil servants, you have a lot of private citizens that may be lawyers, businessmen, consultants, but they're all, one way or another, some of them at least, are well connected with the bureaucratic context. Your role as a citizen has been depending to an increasing large extent in the past 30 years or so with your access to the relevant layer of bureaucracy. So we are indeed a class society, but not class society as Marx used to think about it, but your role and your class belonging, your class membership, depends on mobility within bureaucracy, pretty low, and access to bureaucratic levels. The result is that you are good if you have good connections, and on the other hand, the good people are attracted and absorbed by this kind of hellish machine which involves bureaucrats on the one hand, smart people on the other, the two sometimes coincide, and the business community as a third angle of the triangle. The outcome is stability, modest risk-taking, a lot of regulation, and productivity growth kept high through imitation and technological know-how, technological imports, rather than really outright innovation. That does not mean that Europeans do not innovate. They do innovate, and to a large extent, very well. But when they decide to innovate, they go abroad. I mean, if you have a good idea today, you go to China, to the United States, to India, you certainly do not do it in France, Italy, or Germany. You might want to do it in Switzerland, but with caution. So you have a bureaucratic system which draws its legitimacy from consensus, from the ability to prevent authoritarian rule, and from the ability to oppose what has usually been defined as exploitation by big business. Big business has always been some kind of a ghost that has been waved in front of Europeans in order to legitimize both the party system and the bureaucratic structure. If there weren't big business or if there weren't businessmen, the bureaucracy would fall apart because the main goal has been fighting or pretended to fight big business. The European Union itself is being legitimized today both against the Chinese, because, of course, it's easy to blame the Chinese when in a globalized world you come under pressure and competitive pressure, and against big business exploiting poor citizens. And you've seen that in the popular, enthusiastic approach and support that, for instance, European antitrust authorities have enjoyed in the recent past. What they've done in the past 3 or 4 years is very bad economics, but very good politics. That is, We are protecting European poor citizens from being exploited by, in some cases, American multinationals, in other cases by Chinese invasions, in other cases by Indian tycoons. But the story is always the same. We are there as bureaucrats to protect you. Of course, the real picture has been different. The real picture, especially when it comes to European businessmen, is to collude with bureaucrats rather than confront them. This has been the rule of the game in the European Commission for a long, long time. That is, the bureaucrats legitimize themselves by protecting the citizens and at the same time negotiating with the business people how to serve the common interest, that is, business people and bureaucrats' interests, in the best possible way. It's not new. Frédéric Bastiat had said it over 100 years ago, but it's refreshing to discover this story once upon a time, and it's nothing new, as I said. The only new thing is that the game seems to be falling apart. That is, consensus derived by this double activity carried out by the European bureaucracy. This consensus is not longer what it used to be. People start to understand that rent-seeking, as I said, is no longer sustainable. That is the crisis of the welfare state, but there is much more than that. It's not only the welfare state. It is people start to understand that when a politician comes to you and, as they used to say, we give you more social support, more social security, and they always forgot to say how they're going to finance it. Today, this song is reversed. They're going to say, we are going to decrease taxation, but they never tell you where they're going to cut expenditures. Now, people are becoming aware that they have to tell you the whole story and that those who tell you just half of it are no longer credible. The result is that the political class is losing consensus. If you look at electoral participation rates, you see that the rate of turnout at elections is falling, not dramatically, but gradually and continuously. It is dramatic when you have European elections. People just don't believe in European elections. Nobody turns up to vote because they don't have legitimacy. Last but not least, the bureaucracy does not seem able to find a solution to the rent-seeking problem. That is, the main actors, the rent-seekers, the main rent-seekers have become the bureaucrats themselves. And this is something that Europeans have started to realize. Where are we going? Well, the bureaucracy has tried to propose themselves as regulators, populist regulators. That is what the European Commission is doing. It has failed. State, national leaders have lost legitimacy some time ago, which is good because we are all looking for new leaders, so to speak. Not political leaders, but we understand that if we want to improve our well-being, the political solution is not a solution, and sooner or later we have to begin to work. It is true that some people do work, but many people don't. Things are being made easier by the demographic crisis. That is, unemployment problems that were widespread some two decades ago are being absorbed by the collapse in fertility rates, which means that unemployment is low, which means that deregulating the labor market is not going to create massive terror among the proletarians in Europe, and that the big fight is not going to be on the level of creating employment, because, as I said, that's not going to be the big problem. The big question is, who's going to be able to attract capital? And capital will mean machines, but also means incorporated technological growth. This is where we're moving, slowly, but it is already an improvement with respect to 10 years ago. Where do you see it? Well, all those promises regarding reductions in tax rates are promises that are going towards taxation of capital income. Of course, with some exceptions. Italy is one of those. We're going always in reverse gear, and we'll pay a price. But otherwise, in many European countries, Germany to begin with, taxation on capital income has decreased. Eastern Europe, well, the eastern part of Central Europe, have done roughly the same thing. That is, the first thing they've tried to do is to reduce taxation on capital income, and for good cause, because this is where growth comes from. There's nothing about cultural models there. It's everything about incentives. People who keep telling us that Europe is different because we have the European approach to capitalism are losing credibility. People do begin to understand that there is not a European model as opposed to an American model. There are incentives, and both Americans and Europeans react by and large in the same direction given the same institutional context. Of course, we differ because we are facing a different institutional context. Give us new rules and we will behave differently. Give you new rules and you'll behave differently. The lucky thing is that we are getting gradually, slowly, new rules in the future. So, in the end, and I come to my closing remark, the bureaucracy rule is, in my view, fairly close to the end. That doesn't mean that we'll not get rid of bureaucracy that quickly, but the only way for the bureaucracy to stand alive and to get the salaries is to be harmless. And this is what the European Union bureaucrats are slowly understanding. They're producing lots of regulations, but thanks God, that regulation is no way close to the kind of regulation we had some 10 years ago. That is, that regulation today is aimed basically at justifying their position. It's no longer justified as it used to be to direct, create, and impose policymaking through a top-down mechanism bypassing both the citizens and the politicians. Thank you very much.